This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, we've seen a rise in interest rates recently, with the 10-year Treasury crossing over 3%. The dollar is also rallying as the spreads between interest rates in the U.S. and overseas widen even further. What will be the impact on gold? Let's find out. Joining me on the program is Frank Holmes from U.S. Global. Frank, let's talk about this time of the year. First of all, typically, as you get towards the end of spring in May, is usually a weak period for gold. So let's begin with seasonality for gold. Is it holding up? Is it a buying opportunity, or can things go lower?
You know, gold was doing much better for the months of March and April. Historically, when we look at 30 years of cycles of gold, this seasonal pattern, gold troughs and finds a bottom May, June, and starts its climb because the love trade kicks in. The love trade is predominantly Asia and China, India, in that whole region, which buy gold for love. And it's 60% of all gold consumption goes to these countries. And I think what we've seen here is the seasonal pattern that we've seen gold demand has slowed down. But we've also seen Paulson unwind his bullion and his gold stocks, which has been very depressing to the overall market during this month of March, April. And he just got rid of everybody. So I think that we're in that seasonal lull period that provides for a great buy. And what investors have to recognize is this mean reversion is a very powerful way of looking at bullion and gold stocks. And one of the big factors is looking at the ratio of the HUI to the gold bullion itself. And gold stocks are also very, very cheap on a relative basis. And when if you look at gold to the S&P 500, either the S&P 500 is going through a big correction, gold will provide protection, or the gold and bullion, along with gold stocks, are due for a substantial rally. Now, we launched a smart beta, highly intelligent gold ETF this time last year called Go Gold. And it's done what it's supposed to do. It's outperformed. It's positive, and it's outperformed the other gold equities. And the biggest reason is because it kicks out bad business models or where companies issue shares and they don't find value for them immediately. They don't find reserves. They don't increase the production per share, the reserve per share, or the cash flow per share. And this is a very tight basket of stocks, a tighter name, and they've outperformed. So I think when one looks at that, the gold stocks are due for a big rally, and those that have better value will actually have a huge, much more substantial rally.
I guess one of the questions for investors, at $1,300 gold, can these stocks and companies make money at these prices?
Absolutely. You know, what we had this time last year, which was a real damaging to the capital markets of gold, is that 95% of all fund flows went into the GDX and GDXJ. And all of a sudden, they realized that they owned more than 20% of several companies, and so they had to unload these positions, and they just, especially the GDXJ, pulverized in days. They sold $3.3 billion, took a year to bring the money in. And that really impacts the damage. It's like getting punched by Mike Tyson, and it takes a while for that bruise to heal.
So, Frank, let's talk about the industry itself. It seems like the gold producers have been more shareholder friendly, talking about returning money to shareholders, kind of like what you're seeing in the oil industry, rather than just going out and spending a bunch of money building new mines. What does this say overall for the production of gold? And like anybody else that's in the resource business, what you're selling this year, you're going to have to replace somewhere down the road with other discoveries or new deposits.
Well, it's a great comment and a great question, because if you recall, when oil was over $100 a barrel, pushing 125, it was peak oil until the frackers came along, and innovation technology was the big change with that. But we've not seen that with mining. The only person that can see through rock easily is Superman. And he's a fictitious character, and he gets stuck with lead. So there has been no Superman to be able to say, that's a big deposit, that's a great deposit. And so your innovation has been much more about robotics to improve gold production, but the exploration and the discovery, nothing's happened there. So there's a lot of people, when they look at the difficulties, they believe that we have peaking gold here, that it's going to slow down relative to global population growth, the money supply growth. I would believe that, based on lack of technological breakthroughs, that we could see gold supply really shrink.
Let's say the producers are not spending a lot of money on exploration, building new mines. A lot of those mines had to be shuttered with the drop in the price. You have very unfriendly areas of the world where, you know, you don't have common law or property law protection. So mining companies have been reluctant to explore there. Who's doing the exploration work if we're going to need more gold production? Where's it going to come from?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question, because you look in Canada, they have what's called flow-through funding, and they give 130% write-off, but the money has to be spent only in Canada. And even that, I moved from Toronto almost 30 years ago to Texas, and so that's why they call me a Texcan. Y'all come back, A. It's amazing to see that we were raising, you know, $1 billion a year for exploration back then, and they barely raised $100 million. In this mechanism. So the formation of capital for that risk capital is not there. And that just segues into, which I've written about, in my journey of launching Hive blockchain technology, is trying to launch an ETF when I was launching Go Gold, Go AU, on the New York Stock Exchange. It came along that I wanted to see if I could have a Bitcoin ETF, and at $1,000 an hour legal bills, it's finally quickly discovered that the SEC and the Ontario Securities Commission in Canada just weren't going to let something go through, and it's because their fear, rightfully so, of a hacker showing up with his coins he got paid for being bought by an ETF that's in New York. So in that journey, I discovered about crypto mining, digital currency mining. And that led into that. And what I found is in that journey was all of a sudden these ICOs, and my godson had made a ton of money creating, trading them, selling some of his bitcoins to buy a new ICO. And he would say, Uncle Frank, you got to get into this. And I found it was basically Wild West speculation. And that's what it was. And so in that exploration and trying to figure out, well, who's exploring? Like, who's speculating like this with these buckets of money? And predominantly was millennials. And I did some research and I wrote a piece that their psychology, the demographics is different. Their needs and wants are different. Their expectations, their human behavior. So one of the big things is their impatience. And they have what's called Tinder. And something is a way of trusting to set up a date. And they swipe it back and forth. Yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. Girls check out guys' way, and guys check out girls. And I said, this is incredible. You know, this is crazy. I would never trust. How did I know that's what she looks like? How do I know that's where she went to school? Just because if she prints it, and they trust it. And they only wait seconds, and all of a sudden they just go through it. And then I realized it takes days, sometimes weeks, to open a brokerage account. So our age, you know, going open a brokerage account, a new bank account, the KYC, know your client, AML, all the anti-money laundering laws, it made it so difficult to open an account. Millennials open an account in Coinbase in 5 minutes. 5 minutes, just like Tinder. Mm. And they speculate. So that $5 billion is estimated went into speculation on new ICOs last year. It left junior mining. These millennials aren't going to go explore for gold in Montana or in Nevada or Quebec, etc. They're going to speculate on a new ICO. So I really don't think Bitcoin has hurt gold investors. And also in that journey of learning about Bitcoin mining, I found out that the early buyers and adopters were gold bugs. And they love the fact that only 21 million coins can be distributed and is decentralized. And last week I was speaking at the World Gold Council, and it was a small group of IMF central bankers, et cetera, and we had Greenspan speak, and it was interesting because Greenspan said that they did an analysis that if they stopped printing U.S. dollars, period, and didn't grow with the economy, it's capped at 21 million coins. And so therefore, it is deflationary against the other country's currencies, and it does this surging. And as you get more and more people buying even small allotments, it creates these rallies. And to recognize that these new exchanges were proliferating and growing. And think about Coinbase. Well, I don't know if you know, but the USAA Military Insurance was an early adopter and a shareholder. They told me that when I was launching GoAU, and that they had invested in Coinbase. And in 2015, in a round where a $75 million round, and 6 months ago, it was valued at $1.7 billion. And this week, I read, it's valued at $8 billion. They were growing at 100,000 accounts a day. And these are people buying every day new currencies. They've got all the technology to do the AML and the KYC very quickly. So there's a new change that's taking place, but it's really not hurting gold. It's hurting junior exploration.
You know, in the past, Frank, in the last decade, most of the new discoveries came from the junior miners that were spending the money on exploration. As the price of gold rose, money flew into the sector and more mines were discovered. That's not the case now. You don't have the crazy valuations that you saw in junior mining stocks. A lot of these companies went bust and under. In fact, some of them turned to raising marijuana to make money. So, as you look forward, what's going to bring money back into the sector? When are people going to discover junior mining stocks? Are there quality companies out there in the sector that are really making headway and finding new discoveries? What's going to drive money back into the sector?
What's going to drive it is a discovery always attracts more capital and a staking rush to go into it, like the rally in Bitcoin, Ethereum, and all these new ICOs based on the protocol of Ethereum attracted all this money. But we need a discovery, and we need a region. We need a hot area. You know, maybe we find gold in, you know, a massive geographical footprint where it's a land rush like we had for Hemlo or you had for Nevada. We've had them in all other regions of the world, but we don't have them right now. So I think that that's another factor. That's all I can share with you, speculation. The last thing I share with you on this whole thesis on ICOs, et cetera, it's speculative money. And what's happened with regulations, and I understand to protect retirement dollars, et cetera, that there's been such strong regulations that made it so expensive and difficult to do any exploration. And the brokers to recommend a speculative stock, they can lose their license, go to jail. You know, it's just a real clampdown using one law after the other. And the latest in Canada in particular was the fiduciary rule, the interpretation. In America, it's the cheapest is best, even if it's underperforming, cheapest is best. In Canada, it's all about how speculative the investment is. And anyone over 65 cannot have a speculative stock recommended to it. When those rules came in, they impacted the formation of capital. So with that, when you look at the big data points, and I wrote about that a couple of years ago, and then last year, is that there's been over a 50% drop in IPOs. 50%. The number of publicly listed companies is less than the number of indices. So why is that? Why is it that Silicon Valley, with 15 key players, control almost $1 trillion of private investments they call unicorns? Why? What is that big shift? So the speculative money, the new venture money, is all controlled by 15 people in Silicon Valley. When they think take them public, they're now worth billions of dollars. So that whole ride, that speculative ride to the top, only they basically make that money. The investors out there in the marketplace are not participating in that. So hopefully, you know, they're thinking about changing some of the regulations, streamline the regulations, because the cost of being a public company is just too expensive with Sarbanes-Oxley. We were always leaders in the world for the formation of capital. And I think that that's been another factor that's led to the lack of money going into the space. You need storytelling. And there's few people like yourself that are out there telling the story on gold and explaining what gold is, a gold stock, and the difference between a royalty company and a gold stock, between a dividend paying stock. And I think we need more champions like you in the marketplace.
Well, Frank, as we take a look at this, we know the big companies aren't spending the money on exploration. We know they shut down a lot of projects when the price of gold fell. We know there aren't any major new discoveries. At least you're not hearing of a Garwar equivalent in oil in the gold market. And the junior mining space, as you just talked about, with regulators coming in, cooling the speculative fever, which drives new capital formation. Sooner or later, the laws of supply and demand have to catch up, which would mean higher prices.
It does. You're right, and it will. And I think that as our interest rates have been rising here in the U.S., it's going to create an inflection point. What I have been shocked by or amazed by or dumbfounded by, that the Japanese have not been bigger buyers of bullion when a 10-year government bond there is 5 basis points, not 300 basis points. And in Germany, it's 55 basis points, not 300 basis points. and that the cost of borrowing over there. So we do see steady consumption of gold in Europe, and we do see it in places like Germany and central banks. So we've seen a slowdown in retail consumption and a pickup by central banks, because the central banks have figured out it's a 42% increase, that all this paper money is going to be monetized, and it's just not going to go away. It's going to money heaven. And the only way for that to prevent that dilution is to own some gold. So central banks have been buying it.
So, Frank, given that we're in a seasonality period, typically around this time of the year where the price of gold weakens, on the day you and I are speaking, it's down to roughly almost $1,300. But typically, you see a bounce and you begin an upward move that begins in the summer. At this point, what would you be doing? Would you be dipping in buying bullion? Would you be going in and buying some mining stocks or royalty stocks? Or we just sit on the sidelines and wait for the trend to change?
I think from the big picture, I've always advocated a 10% weighting, and you just rebalance. And right now is one of those great mean reversion periods when it's very attractive to buy. Gold is statistically attractive to buy. Relative to the stock market is cheap to buy. So I think with that, if you're looking for more leverage, then I'd buy the gold stocks. And I would really take a look at GOAU, Go Gold, G-O-A-U, A-U for the element of gold. And it's very intelligent. And when we back tested this with the factors we've used, it's outperformed the GDXJ 92% of the time in rolling 12-month periods. And since we launched it last June, it's done that. It's far outperformed the GDXJ. It's done exactly what it said it would do. So I think that that's a safer way. Now, the question is, why is that? Well, because 30% are royalty companies. And if you want to just be a stock buyer, then I'd take a look at these royalty companies. The Franco-Nevada Silver Wheaton changed its name to Wheaton Precious. And I think that those three amigos offer high profit margin, rising dividends. Franco-Nevada's dividend is the biggest in the gold industry now. They've had a disciplined approach to raising the dividend every year. They have a huge project coming on stream in Panama. And so I think that production starts in Panama will only get re-rated on the upside. But outside of that, if you're looking to buy a basket of quality gold stocks, every quarter, those stocks that do not have growth in the metrics of revenue per share, cash flow per share, high cash flow returns on invested capital, they get kicked out. And we're looking for those that really give you the biggest bang for the buck in that. And so that's the intelligent way, I think, to take a look at the gold space. By the way, you know, it's positive for the past 20 days when the gold stocks are down.
Yeah, I'm looking at a chart.
So it shows that the system works.
Well, listen, Frank, as we close, if our listeners would like to follow your work, you're a very prolific writer. Tell them how they can do so, please.
Go to usfunds.com and sign up for the Investor Alert. And then we have the Frank Talk blog and the Investor Alert. I publish every week. It's put by my investment team, and they go through and do a game film analysis like it's pro sports. Three sentences were strengths and weaknesses each of last week. And what economic data point that's going to come out next week that could have an impact positive or negatively on that asset class. China, our China funds hit the ball of the park relative to the benchmark and peers. We have Eastern Europe. We have All American. We have Holmes Growth Fund. We have near-term tax-free. We have a very short-term government bond fund, U.S. government, so it's a very safe way to play if you're worried about rising interest rates. We have our gold funds, and I think that's the best way to keep in touch with our research to understand what we're doing.
Should you buy and hold at a market top? At Financial Sense Wealth Management, we believe valuations, leading economic indicators, and other metrics are essential for prudent investing to both identify long-term opportunities and minimize risk. Every day, we keep a watchful eye on the markets, continually assessing the investment landscape so you can focus on the things you love most. Don't put your hard-earned wealth at risk.
Give us a call at Financial Sense Advisors. Call toll-free 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. If you're approaching retirement age or concerned about making plans for those retired years and having adequate income, you're going to want to hear our Lifetime Income series every Monday and Tuesday here at FinancialSense.com. Right now, here's a preview of this week's Lifetime Income program.
Joining me on the program is Chris Hennessy from Putnam Investments. And Chris, let's begin with just the broad scope of this tax bill, because we haven't seen anything of this magnitude since the Tax Reform Act of 1986. I don't think people are aware of how encompassing and how many areas of the tax code this bill touched.
Yeah, Jim. So it is clearly probably the largest reduction in corporate rates in history. It is not overall the largest reduction. Probably the largest tax bill was 86, but it is very broad. It's also interesting to note that all of the individual changes and all of the estate and gift tax changes will sunset at the end of 2025. And now any ranking Republican will tell you, oh, yes, but we're going to make all that permanent law by then. Good luck. They need, I think, now 9 votes in the U.S. Senate to do so from Democrats. But it is, as you indicated, it is very significant, and a lot of people, unless they pay attention to it, are going to pay too much money into the government during calendar year 2018 and then get a big refund, which you never want to do because they don't give you interest on the refund, they being the Treasury.
So the Fed met this week. Were there any significant changes? Well, I guess it depends on what you mean by significant and what that means for rate changes coming up for the rest of the year. One thing is very, very true is that the demand for money is no longer based on free market principles, and much of everything that's going on in the markets and in the economy rests on what it is the Federal Reserve is going to do. That's the subject of conversation, among other conversations, coming up next on The Big Picture as the Financial Sense News Hour continues at financialsense.com.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.